Welcome to King of the Myths, where we analyze, scrutinize, and atomic breathalyze the 1956 American release of Godzilla, King of the Monsters, one monster-filled minute at a time. I'm Sir Jack of the Lanterns from the YouTube channel, the same name, and joining me today is...
Travis Bowe from the Real Comic Heroes Podcast.
Thanks for coming on today.
Oh, my pleasure.
And today we're going to examine minute 16. Minute 16 is going to start with a survivor from the attack passing out on the shore, and then Martin is going to ask Tomo if they made the Islander mad at the end of the minute. I find it funny when the very, very beginning of the minute when they're on the helicopter.
Yeah.
So Tomo crosses his arms, and then Steve kind of looks over and crosses his arms too. And if I remember right, I took like one class of psychology back at like my freshman year of college. And if I remember right, isn't that a sign somebody likes you if they start copying your movements?
Yeah, or I think if they're wanting to, if you want them to like you, I think mirroring behavior is some kind of tactic like that.
Yeah, trying to form an attachment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I also noted the that arm crossing moment and kind of the way that Steve just kind of gives him a little smile when he does it. It's a very like George Clooney thing to do. I thought like. I could see George Clooney in this role because he can be, playful in lighter moments like this, but then also obviously be very serious. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's true. I never thought of who I would cast modern day, but yeah, George Clooney would make a good one. I was just trying to figure out if there was like another romance in the story I didn't know about.
Oh.
Yeah, so we're going to move right along. Steve Martin talks about how the Islanders are being interrogated, and I know that he's been inserted into the movie to kind of explain to us, the American audience, what's going on without the need for subtitles, but this is a part I think I would like subtitles. I'm not sure how you feel about it, because they're saying stuff and we're not getting anything that they're saying.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if it was just the file that, I had with, sometimes if you cut up these movies into minutes, sometimes the subtitles don't transfer over. So I wasn't sure if that was the case, or, it was nice the few times that someone would be speaking in Japanese and there would be someone to kind of translate, like Tomo or a few other instances throughout the movie. But yeah, it was a little, it was kind of a shame that we didn't get all the dialogue.
Yeah. And I just feel like they could have done a lot with it, because each Islander could have had, like a slightly different version of the story. And so you're not getting quite the whole picture. Mm. And it kind of lends a little bit more to the mystery of what this thing is. Because at this point, other than the fact that we would have walked into a theater knowing this thing's name and seen it, but we wouldn't really know what it is inside the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm surprised that they also didn't just redub everybody with an American, voice. I mean,
yeah.
On one hand, I'm surprised, but then on the other, it's nice that they just let everyone have their own speaking voice. I mean, I think they dub a few people.
Yeah, Dr. Yamani, I think, is one of them, in Emiko. And
yeah.
A
couple others. Yeah, I saw that James Hong was one of the people that did two of the voices. English voices, or that was a surprise.
Yeah. There's a lot of the extras, a lot of the voices and, people who got invited to do the American scenes with, Raymond Burr, I see are a lot of it is uncredited.
Yeah.
And, a lot of them got double duty, it seems like. So I feel kind of bad that they were in this, what I consider a very, very important film, and, you don't even get noticed for it, really.
Sure, yeah.
But yeah, so another part of the scene is when they're talking to that one farmer. First, they're doing the real obvious, and they've done it other parts of the movie, but it seems more obvious here, the whole everybody's got to face the camera as we talk kind of thing. Because yeah. They all seem to be standing sideways from each other, and it seems very odd. It just stands out, I guess, when you're going minute by minute. And then
yeah.
You get a nice picture. I can't remember if it was this interview or the interview right before it, but I have the note, a nice picture of a cow's behind right between them.
I missed that.
Yeah, so I just.
Oh darn, I missed that.
Yeah, I watched it like two or three times in a row just to try and make sure I had as much notes as I could because this is kind of a light minute. And,
yeah.
Yeah, I just, the third time I couldn't stop looking at that cow.
I see it now. That's funny.
Yeah, I noticed. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say I noted that the helicopter that they fly in is a Sikorsky S-55 H-19 Chickasaw. Was introduced in 1950 and retired in February of 1969, and it was heavily used in the Korean War for troop transport, rescue, and medical evac, as well as hauling cargo. Like, I guess this thing could lift a enormous
weight
payload. Yeah.
Right. My note earlier was. This is going to make me seem like a child, but when I was very young, I used to watch Thomas the Tank Engine.
Okay, yeah.
The white helicopter, who I can't remember the name of, kind of looks like this helicopter, and I don't know if he's supposed to be the same kind.
Mm.
But I haven't seen it in, obviously, years, so I'm kind of glad I don't know that. But the other thing is, at the end of this minute, they're interviewing that farmer. And he seems very adamant about something, and then he just kind of scurries off.
Yeah.
And, you know, they make this statement, you know, did we make him mad? Why is he gone? But he doesn't address like what he actually said. You know.
Right.
Going back to earlier where I said I wish we had subtitles or something, because obviously he said something that upset himself, or he had to immediately go do something important. But we don't really. We're just kind of left to wonder, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. He seemed, you know, so nervous and almost apologetic as he was speaking. But, we don't know. Unfortunately, don't know what he was saying.
Yeah. So it leaves, I guess, a lot to the imagination. It makes me wish I could speak Japanese so I could hear exactly what they were saying and not leave it up to subtitles.
Sure.
And then at the same time, you know, get anything that may have been lost in translation.
Mm, yeah.
Since this minute was kind of late, I had a question for you.
Sure.
Do you remember the first time you either saw this film or the first time you were just introduced to Godzilla in general?
I definitely remember seeing parts of this movie. I think later on the I don't know if you talk about future parts of the movie, but
sometimes.
Okay, just specifically the stuff with the train that we see Godzilla smashing, you know, later. I remember that. Mm-hmm. So that would probably have been the oldest or earliest, you know, because I think the Sci-Fi Channel used to play, you know, these kind of movies all the time. Mm-hmm. And then I definitely got into Godzilla when, you know, when the Matthew Broderick movie came out, because I was what year did that one come out? 98?
I think, yeah.
So I was 15, and, you know, I was at the right age where I was able to just get dropped off at the movie theater and mm-hmm. see this. You know, I probably saw this movie or that movie, you know, easily 10 times in the theater. We had a really small, cheap theater in my town that, you know, I could just spend a day seeing it like twice or whatever and with friends. And so that one was like, you know, I know that it's got a reputation as not being a true Godzilla movie, but it did get me into the movies. And then, yeah, I've seen some of the older stuff mostly through just clips mm-hmm. and some. Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm kind of backwards, I guess. So I grew up in the 90s, and then I distinctly remember times like my dad coming home from work, and then he would turn on the Cowboys game or the Rays or whatever, and then like after whatever event he wanted to watch was over, he would flip over to his other channel, and it was almost always like old monster movies, and like two-thirds of the time it was Godzilla from the 60s. And so I had watched dozens and dozens of hours of Godzilla by the time the 98 film came out, and I was still, I would have been 7, I think, when that film came out. So I was really perfect for the movie because I was not at the age where I was critically thinking about plot or anything like that.
Yeah.
Or acting. So I thought it was awesome at the time, and I still enjoy it. I understand it has its issues, but I still enjoy it. But yeah, so I've watched the majority of the Godzilla movies. Doing research to start this podcast, I've discovered that there's still, I think, 7 or 8, maybe more, that I haven't seen.
Oh, wow.
Because there's like 30-plus films.
So yeah.
I was like, wow, I completely missed these films that came out in the 80s. Okay. But so this film I didn't see for the first time until I was in college already.
Okay.
So this was one of the later films I saw, and this is the film that got me back into Godzilla, because I think story-wise and just the overall feel of the movie, it's, for me, one of the stronger ones.
Mm.
'Cause this is kind of more of a true horror film.
Sure.
And also, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the author H.P. Lovecraft, but it seems very similar to the type of horror he did, where humans are kind of completely helpless in the face of something.
Okay.
But yeah, so I just like to get all my guests to talk about the first time they were exposed to this.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish I had like a real strong, you know, like Godzilla memory, but I think it was just a random kind of encounter, like, oh, here's that, you know, a Godzilla movie that I've, you know, heard about. Or actually, probably the first thing I ever saw was a toy, you know, that,
yeah,
like, I don't know, 18-inch tall Godzilla toy that kind of everyone had in the late 80s.
The one that launched his hand off?
Maybe, yeah.
My uncle had a toy, and it was very tall, and it was definitely the older Godzilla, not the 98 one. And
yeah,
I remember like his hand, for whatever reason, launched off, which is not something Godzilla can do, but they decided to put on a toy, and I, as a young kid, thought it was awesome. So that's all I got for this minute. Like I said, it's a pretty light minute. Do you have anything else, Dad?
No, that was all I had.
You want to remind our listeners where you're from then?
Sure. I am from the podcasts Real Comic Heroes, and I'm also on Watchmen Minute, where we go through the director's cut of Watchmen 1 minute at a time.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
And you can find this show on Instagram, King of the Minutes, Facebook, just search Godzilla Podcast. Also, if you want to help support the show, you could review us on wherever you're listening to this podcast.